Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. This is where we affirm, celebrate, and apply the skills and the arts of dreaming, of monitoring meaningful coincidence, and of using our creative imagination. I'm very happy we have a wonderful guest today. His name is Timothy Ewan, Tim Ewan. His website is visionaryroads.com. How about that? And he is a visionary. He's one of our teachers of active dreaming, where, as you know, we meld shamanic ways of shifting consciousness to modern dream work and the use of imagination. Tim loves to work deep with imagery and symbols as they appear in the psyche and as they appear in the world at large. He aims, he says, and I know this to be right, to help others to build bridges between the inner and the outer worlds and to live the greatest dreams of their hearts. He leads a monthly dream circle in Boise, Idaho. That would be a great thing to be able to be part of. And he's a dream archaeologist, which is one of our themes for today. What is a dream archaeologist? Well, a dream archaeologist, a phrase that I invented, is someone who combines the skills of a very active dreamer, in fact, a shamanic lucid dreamer who could embark on dream journeys to different places and times, combines that kind of dreaming skill with the skills and the appetite of a scholar and the nose of a detective. So a dream archaeologist is certainly a dreamer, a scholar, and also a dream detective. Tim has led journeys for our advanced groups. He led a wonderful journey to the ancient Egyptian mortuary temple city of Abydos in Upper Egypt, which he had visited. And people had amazing experiences, and I'm going to see whether I can prevail upon him in this first segment a bit later to guide us with his voice on a journey to an ancient site that compels him. He might choose Abydos again, or he might choose something else. Since then, we've been on a number of journeys together to the ancient site of the Temple of Athena at Priene in what is now Western Turkey, to a dream incubation site in Lydney Park in Gloucestershire, and to other places. Welcome, Tim.
Hello, Robert. Thank you for having me here.
Tell me what dreaming means in your life. I mean, right back to the first dreams you remember, if you like, or through any dreams that might have been turning points for you, and through your daily or weekly practice right now.
Absolutely. So dreaming for me is a continual source of wonder. I think it's very important for us to recapture and keep our sense of wonder in the world, kind of keep that enchantment in life. And from my youngest ages that I can remember my dreams, I always got so much meaning out of them. Even if I didn't understand them at the time or the images that I was being presented, there's still something about the mystery of it, about looking at dreams and the feeling, the visceral experiences I'd feel in my body when I'd think about them, and kind of the clues and inspiration that came along with dreams. Sort of along the topic we're talking about now, dream archaeology. Sometimes our dreams would drop us hints and give us assignments to look at things in this world, to kind of bridge the worlds between the inner and outer. And that's fascinated me throughout my life, something I continue to do.
I'm fascinated by how dreams, spontaneous dreams that people didn't ask for, may or may not understand, sometimes throw them into the thick of their connection with another culture, another place and time. Sometimes they feel it's reincarnational. Sometimes they feel they're meeting a personality from a previous life that might be part of their ongoing story. Sometimes it feels both personal, but not as personal as that, in the sense you're meeting someone to whom you're connected, but you don't have to put a tag on the exact nature of the relationship. I think one of my very first public dream workshops, and a woman was there, and she was confused. She'd been raised Catholic. She called herself recovering Catholic. And she said it was a very strange dinner scene. It sort of reminded me a bit of the Last Supper, because wine and bread were being passed around the table, and the loaves had crosses on them, but they weren't the Calvary cross. They were sort of equal-armed cross. But the people at the table were the amazing thing. There's someone wearing the head of a crow. There's someone wearing some kind of military helmet. There's someone wearing something else. And as I listened, I said, oh, my goodness. You've described the regalia of members of the different orders as the Mithraic hierarchy, celebrating the Mithraic mysteries. I mean, Mele's soldier is one of the ranks. Corvus, Raven, or Crow is one of the ranks. And she's a woman, and these rites were reserved for men, though there may have been a feeble, not feeble, but female branch we don't know about. She's right inside it. I mean, she's right inside it. She has all these details, not just of the food and drink and the outfits, but it's as if she is there as a made man of the ancient Mithraic mysteries. What's going on here? Well, at the very least, there's some sense of connection, and as you and I would appreciate, there's now an incentive to go do some research, go look things up, go learn about something that has not been in your field of knowledge. And for me, as somebody who loves to read and do research, that's part of the fun of this kind of thing, making a connection and having enough of a clue in a funny word or a funny headdress to be able to find it. Of course, today, in the age of Google, it's so much easier to find things than it used to be. I mean, you're much younger than me, but you can remember when it wasn't as easy as it is now. I just found yesterday, this is our common love of Egypt, I just found yesterday the archaeologist's report on the archive of Hor, H-O-R. Hor was a priest of Isis and then of Thoth, basically in the Egyptian delta in like the 2nd century B.C.E., and he kept a record of his dreams, and I'd seen bits and pieces of these records in other sources. But years ago, I went looking for the book. I was prepared to pay big money for it. I could not find it. Now it's there. It's there online. You can look it up. You have to squint at the rather blurry text on the screen, but there it is. So I was sitting here before talking to you today, reading the translations and commentaries on the broken ostraca, the broken potsherds, containing the dream records of an Egyptian priest from about 165 BC. There it is online. So, Tim, when you look over your life, I mean, and you think about the dreams, conscious or spontaneous sleep dreams or meditations or journeys, is there one or more that you would pick out that really were turning points for you, either in terms of shaping your understanding of life or in actually motivating and triggering life decisions?
Yes, in fact, there are several, but one comes to mind where I was given a mysterious image and a name. So I was in the in-between state. I was kind of hypnopompic state, and this figure appeared to me, a woman, robed and veiled in blue. And she had this glow about her, very soft, very inviting, but also a little distant. It was a bit of a paradox. And I stood in awe here with this image, and I asked, "What can I call you?" And she said, "Cynthia." And here I was expecting, you know, a name of a recognized goddess or some other being that I might know. But that name, I said, "That's just a name. That's just like someone's name. What could this be about?"
I didn't quite get the name. Say the name again.
It was Cynthia.
Lucia, like Zeus?
Cynthia. Cynthia, yeah.
Oh, Cynthia.
Yeah. Cynthia.
Yeah, I guess it's funny. Something is blurring the name. So it's something like Cynthia.
Uh-huh.
Okay, all right. Well, Cynthia is a moon goddess, of course, but don't let me hold up your story.
All right, yeah, and that's the first thing I did when I came back to this world. I was like, okay, well, maybe that name has a particular origin that I can look up. So I did, and it comes from the Greek, meaning from Mount Kynthos, or born from Mount Kynthos, and was an epithet of Artemis and also used with Selene, Selene, the moon goddess. And so it was. It was a name in the ancient Greek world that was used to identify this goddess. A name I'd heard that, you know, people in this world being named Cynthia, but I had never heard of a goddess named Cynthia. So this led me down a track of research. And right. In fact, it's going to culminate in a bit of a pilgrimage to Delos later this year, where Mount Kynthos is found, to visit the place where
right.
this name
that's
came
where
from.
Where Artemis and Apollo were born, on Delos, the floating island, which only became anchored in the sea bottom when they were born. It was floating until they came into the world. Yes, thank you. So you're goading my memory of these things, too. Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I've known a number of women called Cynthia in my life, and one of them imparted to me years ago, Jim, that my name is the name of the goddess of the moon. Don't forget it. So I had help decoding that name some time ago. Well, that's a good example of an annunciation dream. I'm fascinated by the blueness of the presence of this being in the dream. I've had a blue lady off and on in my dreams, and when I think about the most important figures who still somehow remain pretty mysterious, I think of the one I just called the Blue Lady. And it's interesting in how many mythologies and how many personal dream records a Blue Lady, the Blue Lady, appears. I mean, if you go Catholic, of course, you make it Mary, but you make it Bridget, perhaps, if you're Irish. But she has many names, and she has a form beyond all the names, and there she is. Cynthia for you, from the mountain of Artemis. Interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yes. There are many more I can think of.
This experience took place in that liminal, that precious liminal state between sleep and awake, which is now I'm endlessly goading people to make more of, because it's very interesting how few people who write or speak about sleep and dreams pay much attention to this hypnagogic state. I can't think of any book solely devoted to this except a quite good one from the 80s by a Greek Cypriot scholar called simply Hypnagogia. He went a bit strange and Cypriot Castaneda-ish later on, but the scholarly book on Hypnagogia, Mavromatis, is quite good. But apart from that, I can't think, and I haven't written one myself, I've written some chapters, of a book that does justice to all that becomes possible in this liminal state. But at the same time, when you look at the history of these things, when you look at when discoveries and creative breakthroughs have been made, for example, when psychic experiences have multiplied, and when, you know, transpersonal guides, deities perhaps become present, it's often in that liminal state. So it sounds as if it's a state that is not strange to you, where you spend a certain amount of time. Talk to us a bit more about that. And talk to us also as you might encourage other people to make more use of this fertile liminal place.
Absolutely, yes. It's a very important state. And when I have the opportunity, just lying in bed in the morning, if I make a space for myself, which I do, even if it's just a few moments, a few minutes, to as I'm coming back from sleep, to keep that awareness of the dreams, of where I've traveled, and also to open up to what might want to appear, just like the experience I just described. It's a magical space where many things are possible. And so that's the very natural state I find myself in, but it can also be induced. I can ask for that state many times during our workshops together. Yeah, I'll find myself in that state. We'll facilitate it sometimes with a bit of drumming to drive the physiological state and make it fertile for hanging out in that state. But it is a magical space. It is a place where possibilities happen. It is definitely the liminal space.
About every day or every night experience, they're going to find themselves in this liminal space either before they fall asleep, or maybe fail to fall asleep, but when they're in that state that might be leading to sleep, or in the middle after one round of sleep, when maybe they've gone to the bathroom or maybe they're lying there in the middle of the night in between, or in the morning or whatever time they're beginning to surface from sleep, because we, you know, have different time clocks and different time schedules. You know, the ancients recommended paying particular attention to the dreams and images that arise when you're returning to ordinary life and you're coming out of sleep, coming out of a sleep experience. The $5 word is the hypnopompic state. I sometimes found that to be true. I've also found that when you're coming out of the last phase of sleep or dormancy, often the remains of a dream are with you and you can stay with it. Now you're lucid dreaming and you can carry it on to a new chapter or a finale if you like. But I find all these liminal spaces interesting. And like you, you just talked about waiting to see what comes up. I often am content to set no agenda. I mean, there are many agendas we could set. We set all these destinations for our group journeys in and around the workshops, for example, and we've been to all sorts of interesting places. If you've been to one of those, you can go again, you can go back to a dream. But I often find it quite sufficient simply to lie there letting things emerge. And often I'll just let a lot of images come and go, but then something hooks my attention, or perhaps I'm suddenly in a scene where things are happening and people are looking at me and can see me and I'm interacting with them, so I decide, okay, let's go with this for a while. Now you're off. Yeah. You're in a lucid dream state. My friends who teach people about lucid dreaming talk about prompts and cues and methods of waking yourself up to the fact that you're dreaming while you're asleep inside the dream. But it's always seemed to me that the easiest way to become a lucid dreamer is to start out lucid and stay there. I mean, if you start out in this in-between state with some degree of awareness, maybe you can carry it through successive states of sleep and close to sleep and wake and dream and all the rest of it. And, of course,
absolutely,
as we know, if you do have a dream image, you can go back inside it, and then it becomes your portal for what might be a terrific adventure. Do you do that often? Do you find yourself, you know, when you're on your own time, as opposed to in the workshops where we do it regularly, but in your own time, do you find that you're often prompted to go back inside a dream and make it a gateway for a further adventure or discovery?
Yes, particularly when it feels strong. There's a particular feeling I get when a dream in a space is supposed to get my attention. And so I make note of those, and those ones tend to be good gateways, either for further travels and adventures or to pick out something in particular, something that the dream wants to show me.
I think I'm going to give you a dream fragment from last night right now, Tim, and ask you to play Dream Guide for me. We've only got a couple of minutes, so I'm going to demonstrate how quickly this can be done. Then after the break, I'm going to ask you to lead a little excursion in dream archaeology. I think we'll start fresh for that. Okay, it's just a vignette from a much longer dream. It's all that I've basically got. I am walking on rural property with a dog that is not my own. I like the dog. It's the color of a yellow lab, but it's huge, the size of a mastiff. And there's something about its brutal strength and jaws that makes me think of a big guard dog like a mastiff. But it's the color of a yellow lab. And it's walking fast, and I'm walking with it, and it's fine. And suddenly it goes around a bend on a dirt road, like a farm road. And I hear a rush and a whoosh, and suddenly a wounded deer comes staggering round the bend. I think, oh, no, the dog's attacked the deer. And I rush round, I rush to see what I can do. And beyond the wounded deer is a deer that has been stripped to the spine. It's alive. It's moving. But it's like the dog has rendered this deer and ripped its body off. I'm not sure if the head is still a head or just a skull, but the torso is gone. It's just a spine, and it's running. And I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I want to break this thing's spine so it's not running around like some demonic being? I'm not sure. And I come out of the dream feeling actually quite calm. Want to have a go at this? And I was calm in the dream. I mean, it's happening, but it's happening. I mean, it sounds rather appalling, but, you know, anyway. Have a quick go at the dream.
Wonderful, yes. Do you have a title for this dream?
I didn't give it one. he made a spirit deer. He made a spirit deer.
need a spirit there. Okay, okay. Hmm. That is intriguing. And so you described a little bit about your feelings when you woke up. You felt fairly calm.
I felt perfectly calm. This vignette was embedded in a much longer dream in which I was doing things with good people on the rural land. The dog was not my own. I do recognize that I might have had some responsibility for the behavior of the animal, but I wasn't. I was curiously calm both in the dream and outside it.
Absolutely. Very curious. What would you like to know about the dream? Is there something in particular that's coming to your mind?
I'd like to know what's going on. I'd like to know whether the dog represents, for example, an aspect of me that I have to watch. I'd like to know why I wasn't more upset about the deer, because I care about deer, and deer are very sacred animals to me, and normally I would expect to be distraught. And yet it just seems to be a fact of whatever kind of life the dream is reflecting.
Well, I have a few things that occur to me. Would you like me to share those if it were my dream?
Please do.
Okay. Curious about the dog that is with me, a big guardian dog, but a yellow lab, a friendly dog to me. Big and powerful, but as it attacks this deer and strips it, I think of perhaps maybe there is a part of me that sees myself as a guardian, as a companion, as this big yellow dog, and also might be connected to this dream energy of the deer. The deer for me is a guide, a healer, a very powerful image to me. And if these two came into a sort of apparent conflict, but I felt calm about it, I wonder if my guardian part, this dog, is perhaps stripping down to the bare bones the aspects of what is important to this deer energy. What about it makes it alive? What about it gives it movement and life? Maybe it's not something that was apparent to me before.
Okay. Tim, this is fascinating. We're going to have to take a break. I'm really sorry since I'm enjoying this so much. We're listening to Tim Ewan actually helping me with one of my own dreams. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
All right, you're back with Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Timothy Ewan. Tim was helping me with one of my dreams from last night, and he's given me a lot to think about. We won't go on with that now, except I'll just say, Tim, that it's going to lead me on another line of research, because now I'm thinking of a breed of very big guard dogs called Molossians, which come from the northwest sort of Greek Macedonia part of the world, which has some mythic importance to me. And I'm just wondering whether my dog was actually a Molossian. So I'm going to have to do a little bit of ancient history research as well, which I love. Okay, speaking of ancient history, though it might not be ancient history you have in mind, I want to invite you to guide us on a journey. You've got about 7 minutes. We can't do the drumming given the state of the phone lines, but we can make it a meditation, and you can guide us somewhere, and we'll have a little experiment in dream travel without leaving home. So over to you, Tim.
Absolutely. Well, Robert mentioned that I did visit Abydos in Upper Egypt last year. It was a very important trip for me. And the site itself plays a prominent role in Egyptian politics and religion and spirituality. It was continuously in use for a period of about 3,000 years from pre-dynastic times up through the late era. During that time, the land was known and the teachers were known there to guide people on how to cross over well to the next life. Many of the first pharaohs of Egypt were buried there, and those in Egypt that could afford to be buried there were, and those that could not afford to make the journey would send offerings with those that could. The site itself is connected with many figures and guides, psychopomp guides, in ancient Egypt, including Wepawet, the opener of the ways, a jackal-headed figure, but not quite, and more of a gray wolfish figure. Kintibmientu, the foremost of the Westerners. Amenti was another name for the West and the underworld, otherwise known as the Duat in other places. Anubis was also honored there, as well as, most famously, Osiris, the Lord of Life from Death, who had a great temple that was built and rebuilt many times on the site there. But save for a few prominent structures, particularly those ones in the New Kingdom, so later on, the ruins of Abydos mostly remain unexplored and unexcavated in the desert. There are layers upon layers of history and knowledge awaiting discovery there. The remaining temple that is there, the temple of Seti I, the father of Ramses the Great, Ramses II, a very impressive temple, and is the one that still remains. And we'll start our journey there. From there, we'll have free reign to explore the area around it. But let's start with Seti's temple as a portal image. So we'll have you stand before, seeing your mind's eye, this great limestone structure. It has several colonnades, entrances into the temple itself. You walk in, you will see several of the deities throughout, honored throughout Egypt, on the walls and on the entrances. Everything from Amun, Tiamut, Nentoth, Isis, Osiris, Horus, all are honors here. Inside, there is a hypostyle hall, a hall of columns. All the walls and columns are covered with artwork and hieroglyphs telling the stories of Egypt and the work that goes on here. Passing through this is another hypostyle hall of columns. And behind that are seven shrines honoring the deities that are enshrined here by Seti, including Seti I. The holy family of Isis, Osiris, and Horus, as well as the political family of Luxor at the time, Memphis, which was Amun-Ra, and with. You may have free reign to explore these, to make offerings, if you like. Also in this temple, there is a sanctuary for healing, one where miracles were said to be performed. going out beside the temple, behind the temple to the south, just a short way is a mysterious structure known as the Osirian. It is built down beneath the earth, and there's not another structure quite like it in Egypt. There are channels filled with water, and parts of it look like it may represent an island, such as the Primordial Island that arose from the one version of the Egyptian creation stories. Around the desert, around these temples, to the west is the old Temple of Osiris, which you may go visit. It's now in ruins, but depending on vision, you may see it in a different state. There nearby would have been the sacred lake that was used by the temple. To the south-southwest is a sacred mountain that was considered the physical entrance to the underworld, to the Duat, to Amenti. There is a gap in the mountains to the south-southwest that is said to lead one directly there. If you choose to go in this direction, I would choose to go with a guide, perhaps Osiris or Anubis, or one of the other Sankopam guides, or maybe one of your own. Also scattered throughout the desert, there are numerous burials and tombs, many of which I would suggest leaving intact, letting them undisturbed. However, you may encounter some figures there from various points in history that may offer a bit of knowledge or a bit of insight into their times and their place. Ancient Egypt was a place where many considered the journey of life and the journey to the next world. And in doing so, they consulted their guides, their priests, and they sought direct knowledge too. This was something that was very real to them in an everyday sense. Their inner and outer bridges were developed and quite clear for many. And so you may find a lot of clues to exploring these and bridging these inner and outer worlds in this site.
All right, Tim, I think you can let us go during the minute or so we have before the break to follow the path that you opened for us, and then perhaps people will continue during the break, and perhaps we'll pick up afterwards.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. mossdreams.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
I think you're already feeling how good Tim is at leading us into the composition of place. That's a phrase that the Jesuit, Ignatius Loyola used for his methods of exercising creative imagination. He took us into the temple complex at Abydos. I think he wants to take us a bit further, suggest some more things to look at and experience, and then also encourage us to make sure to bring back a gift from the journey. So back to you, Tim.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robert. Yeah, so continuing on our journeys here, as Robert mentioned, this is important too. This is a deep travel, and there are many gifts to bring back. It may be a gift of knowledge. It may be an image or a word, something we can follow up with dream archaeology, a little bit of research in this world afterwards. But there are many, many opportunities to explore and to learn here. You may make offerings and receive blessings from the spirits and guides that reside here. And you may learn a little bit about paths to cross over, what it means to cross over well, what it means to live a good life, a whole life, and to live it to the utmost in order to carry that forward into our next life. So as you journey among these ruins, which may be very much alive and vibrant in your journeys and visions, remember to bring a gift back, something to bridge the worlds, something that you can bring back a little bit of that magic, that enchantment, a little bit of that wonder to keep with you. It may be an image, it may be a word, it may be a feeling, but something, bring back something that feels important to you, to bridge that world, to keep that connection open, to keep that connection between our inner and outer resources open, bridge these worlds. And when you're ready, return, give thanks to the gods that you may have experienced here, and come back to this world, remembering to bring the gift, bring the wonder, bring the joy, and to keep these pathways open for the good journeys that you'll have in the future.
So great, Tim. I think our listeners might want to play this again at home and stop it and take whatever length of time they would like to follow your lead into the territory. They might want to put on, if they have one, a drumming recording or some other music, or simply have the space, the spaciousness of, 10 minutes of quiet time before they come back, as you've encouraged, with a journey, with a word, with a talisman, with something to hold the memory in their mind. I must say that when you did this for us in an in-person advanced gathering with drumming, I was immediately there, although I didn't entirely follow your directions about paths to take, because suddenly something was buzzing right in front of my face. It looked very large, close to my eyes, and it was a scarab beetle. I mean, how Egyptian can you get? The scarab buzzing and flapping led me straight into a scene, which I won't try to describe here, but it was straight into the life of the Egyptian personality from the end of the 18th dynasty, actually, before Ramses and Seti I, previous dynasty. And I saw things that I had labored to understand but could not really understand until I had what seemed to be the full experience of the effect of some of the post-mortem procedures of ancient Egypt. I seemed to go through it. So I was very grateful for that, and also shocked by it, I must say. And a lot of our listeners have Egyptian connections and have a love of Egypt. Many dreamers seem to. And the question always arises, well, wait a minute, who is this? What is the nature of the connection? Maybe you and I should talk a little bit about that. I try to remain agnostic about it. I do think, from the life that I've lived this time round, I do think that our lives are connected to the drummers. Of other lives being lived in other places and time. But I don't want to be in a rush to say, this is straightforward reincarnation. What's your feeling about this? What's your experience of this? What do you feel about your own relations with personalities in other times and places? Is there an Egyptian Tim, for example? You love Egypt.
Well, I've wondered that, too. And it's really interesting because as a child and growing up, I think I just had a rather normal fascination with Egypt. Nothing extraordinary. I wasn't like, oh, Egypt. But, a normal fascination with something exotic and different and all these treasures that were, displayed in books and whatnot. But I found myself on some sort of level called there. And for one reason or another, I am connected to it in a way I haven't fully understood yet. I believe that I have seen glimpses of other times, what seem to be maybe moments in someone else's life, multiple lives there. And when I think about, possible connections, I do think about a larger multidimensional self, one that's existing in multiple places at the same time, kind of a larger soul that incarnates in different times and places, maybe not in a linear way, though. So I see those lives as very alive in different times and places, and sometimes we get a glimpse into them.
Yeah.
A glimpse into some of these other parts of a soul that are existing in other times and places.
It can actually be thrilling to get that glimpse, of course. You have stood at the sites of some of these far memories. I've stood at some of the sites too, but sometimes we can do the destination travel from home, which is also interesting. It's funny, I was thinking, what do I bring to Tim in his radio show today? And I was reading one of those texts by the kind of scholar we don't find around much anymore, who just throws some Greek or Latin in the midst of an English paragraph, assuming everyone will understand it. I'm afraid I mostly don't, but I'm looking at a statement in Greek, and I can sort of just about make it out. I had to use Google Translate, didn't do it for me. I had to go to an ancient dictionary, and it says, my Greek pronunciation might be strange, but probably better than my Egyptian pronunciation. It says, Heri Heri Egypte, Tephthasthame. What does that mean? It means, hail, hail, or rejoice, rejoice. Egypt has nourished me. Well, where does it come from? Egypt has nourished me, and I'm thinking of you. It comes from Isis. These are words of Isis as recorded from an inscription seen by a Greek historian, Diodorus, traveling in the desert, in the first century B.C. Egypt has nourished me. I thought, that's a pretty good message for Tim.
Yeah.
The fact that I had to do some decoding made it a little bit more exciting, too. Egypt has nourished you. Well, I think we're just going to play around in our last half hour. We've been playing around already. We're going to let our dreams and our love of history and mythology and what Jung called amplification. Jung spoke of amplification when he was talking about letting a dream guide you into research, maybe into looking at the collective dreams of humanity, the myths, the folklore, the never-ending stories, which sometimes resemble the personal stories that come to us in our dream space. That's one of the things that I love about the kind of dream work that I practice myself and encourage others to do. It does provide us with windows into the all, into the into the non-local information field, the vast field of non-local knowledge, within which, of course, there's the Akashic Library and other ones. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer. Our wonderful guest is Timothy Ewan, dream worker, dream archaeologist, dream guide in Boise, Idaho, and probably wherever you choose to meet him. His website is visionaryroads.com. Check him out. We'll be back in a moment.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
We are back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Tim Ewan. What a wonderful dreamer, explorer, guide, imagineer, dream archaeologist you are, Tim. I'd love to have a chance to play dream guide for you with one of your own dreams or similar stories. Do you have one you'd like to share?
Absolutely. This one is fairly recent, within the last few weeks. And so in the dream, I find myself standing on a city street. There's a busy city street behind me. In front of me are glass doors and glass windows. It looks like something like an art gallery. I walk in through the glass doors, and standing in the front entryway is maybe four different statues, carved statues from stone, of what look like seated Buddhist figures, maybe Buddhas of some form or another. I look at them and I ask the curator, it's like, what are these? What am I looking at here? And they say they are the basalt teachers, and that they are teachers that were incarnated here to give teachings, and in order for them to continue their teachings, they transform themselves into stone so they could continue to teach and people could continue to receive teachings. As I looked at that, he mentioned that they were not in cases because they are living beings, that people could come and visit them and speak with them. And I definitely had a sense of wonder and intrigue about these. I hadn't heard about anything like this before.
So these are stone figures?
Yes, yeah, they're like carved. They look like carved statues, some of which I've seen in Buddhist artwork.
Right. So what are your feelings around the dream, then and now?
Yeah, then and now, still wonder. I'm in excitement. I feel very energized about them. There's something about them that intrigues me.
you have connections to the cultures and religions from which such figures might come. You were given some explanation in the dream. You say maybe Buddhist, maybe Taoist. Do you have any more specific association with the figures?
Absolutely. So I did and have practiced Vajrayana Buddhism, and I was active in a pretty intensive practice for 7 or 8 years. And so the meditational figures and practices are somewhat familiar to me, but I had never seen or heard of a tradition like this. In some ways, it does remind me very much of the concept of Bodhisattva and Bodhisattva vows in certain streams of Buddhism, where a being will vow to remain to teach.
Right. So what do you want to know at this point?
I would like to know if, one, these types of figures or this type of tradition is in this world. But also, what in particular might they be wanting to teach me? Why am I seeing this now?
Right. Okay, well, if it's my dream, the immediate synchronistic association I make is with the story of the stone. This is the title of one of the translations of the most famous book in Chinese history, the fictional work, The Dream of the Red Chamber. Its title in the three-volume Penguin translation is one of the several titles that early editors gave of the story of the stone, and it starts with a talking stone. A stone that contains an inscription that couldn't possibly fit on any stone, even a stone the size of a mountain. It is the story of the stone. The stone contains the story, which is layer upon layer of dreams and the meaning of life and encounters with gods, deities, spirits, and so on. And when I opened the book at random yesterday, I found myself reading about a miniature statue, stone again, I think, of a Chinese god of literature who's sometimes called Wen Chang, though his name wasn't on that page. So I've given you a stone which contains a story far beyond what any stone could ordinarily contain, and a stone that is a representation, maybe a living, breathing image, of a god of literature of the kind that every student, scholar, and writer likes to have on his or her side. So it's taken me right into my own current studies include reading a lot of stuff from China, from India, from Tibet about Buddhism, Taoism, original shamanic practices, etc. At the moment, I'm very deeply into China, and that includes the literature and the fiction, which is full of dreams. And I'm also thinking of the traditions, Buddhist, Taoist, and probably others as well, of teachers, sages, coming back again and again and again. I was reading about one who is said to have come back 76 times. 6,000 would not be impossible in some of the other texts. So you've got someone coming back, Bodhisattva-like, multiple times, not accepting moksha or nirvana, not getting out of the race of the world because of the desire to continue to contribute to the evolution and enlightenment of other human beings. You know a lot about the Bodhisattva tradition. But also part of that tradition, which is often presented very humorously by the Taoists, is that, you know, the teacher will take whatever form is appropriate. If the appropriate form is of a drunken publican or a dancing girl, the teacher might take that form. Actually, that's in a Buddhist text, could translate by Thomas Cleary as entry into the realm of reality. The teacher will take whatever form is appropriate for the milieu. So you know what I'm going to say now. If this is my dream, I absolutely want to get back inside. I want to see whether I can deal directly with the living stone statues. I guess I want to go thoroughly through the gallery, if the owner or proprietor will let me, and see what else is to be found there, what I can bring back. And since the milieu is an art gallery, Tim, I mean, there are creative things I'm going to want to make to celebrate all of this, right?
Wonderful. Thank you, Robert. Yeah, several leads for me to to follow there.
Yeah, I just love this goading. I mean, Jung famously in my mind anyway, He wrote in Memories, Dreams, Reflections that I have interesting thoughts all day, but I take up in my work only that to which my dreams guide me. I live very much the same way. I guess I have the luxury of living substantially as a private scholar, doing a bit of teaching on the side, but a bit of writing on the side too. But, you know, I would add dreams and synchronicity, and Jung would say the same thing these days, too, having invented the word synchronicity. I just love the shove. Sometimes the push, it's a real shove, not just a tip, not just a clue, that a calling dream can give us to go check something out. And sometimes, as with your dream of the art gallery and the stone peaches, I mean, it's right there, isn't it? The door is open. It's open. I mean, I personally feel a sort of tractor beam from this dream. I mean, wanting to pull me into that art gallery. I could see you in front of the glass windows of the art gallery so clearly. I saw your dream exactly, but I did see statues, and they did seem not surprising to me that they were stone. And there are some very brightly colored paintings on the left wall that I cannot wait to look at if it's my dream.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful.
So you've got an action plan.
I do. I do.
Now, what's your bumper sticker?
My bumper sticker is... My bumper sticker is, we are alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, the Talking Stones, and it is so interesting. Yeah, the Dream of the Red Chamber, which has alternative titles, is probably the most popular work of fiction ever produced in Asia, not just in China. But its name in the very accessible Penguin translation in three volumes is The Story of the Stone. That's where it begins. That's where it ends. All right, we've been having great fun with Timothy Ewan. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back to say thank you and dream on in a moment.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Thank you, Timothy Ewan, your fabulous guest, your fabulous dreamer. You're a great dream guide and dream archaeologist. May your best dreams come true.
Thank you, Robert.
And to everybody listening, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.